Welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast, this holiday edition with only 2 days now until Christmas. And joining me, as always, is my co-host and one of the most athletically smart men in all of NDSU, Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, how are you? Just 48 hours left until Christmas, and how much Christmas shopping do you have to do after this episode?
Very little. I'm good. I have one thing that I have to take care of for my goddaughter, and I know exactly where it is, and I know how much it costs and where to get it. And it's going to be real easy on my way through Fargo back to the farm tomorrow, so no stress there, no Christmas-related stress whatsoever.
And what are you hoping that Santa brings in your stocking Christmas morning? I know there's a lot of people asking.
Well, I think we kind of already got our Christmas presents as NDSU fans. We've got tickets to Paradise. And by Paradise, of course, I mean probably 38-degree Frisco, Texas on the 9th of January.
All right, so as Ross said, you know, let's get into it. Let's look at the NDSU versus Richmond game, which really wasn't much of a game, as, you know, Ross alluded to in our preview show. Before I get into it anymore, Ross, would you like to give a little bit of a Nostradamus slash pat on your back to everybody in the listening audience?
Yeah, just, you know, if you want, go ahead and listen back to the Richmond preview and all the points that I made about that game and the score prediction and how that game was going to go. I don't get everything right, but boy, oh boy, did I absolutely nail that one. So that was fun, obviously, to hit that one right, you know, kind of on the button. And you know, the most fun, of course, is going to Frisco to cover. Well, this will be my first, you know, going to cover, but to enjoy yet another NCAA FCS championship game.
And so another reason Ross is so happy is because of the stifling defense that was on display. And again, Ross, they only held this Richmond offense 209 yards of total offense and only 47 total offensive plays. To put that in perspective for folks, NDSU had 52 rushing attempts. So the Bison had more rushing attempts than Richmond had attempts of total offense. And, you know, another huge part of that was 3 of 12 on third down for Richmond. So talk to me about this NDSU defense.
It's just playing, you know, at the highest level that I've seen a Bison defense play in the playoffs, and that includes the 2013 defense. We know that sent a ton of guys to the NFL. It'll probably continue with C.J. Smith, who was a big part of that defense, but he's a big part of this defense too, and these guys are really playing exceptional football. Even the young kids, the Jalen Allisons and the Robbie Grimsley's, Trey Dempsey, guys that haven't been in this program all that long are just playing exceptionally well, really, and limiting opponents completely. I mean, Richmond had all these points against Illinois State, and they couldn't get anything going against the Bison in the Fargo Dome. Obviously, you know, part of that is the crowd and the noise and Bison Nation and things like that. But, man, these guys are playing outstanding football.
Keep going.
Well, and part of the defense, too, is the running game, and I think that's what we're going to talk about next.
Yeah, and another accomplishment for this NDSU team is King Frazier was able to go over 1,000 rushing yards against the Richmond Spiders on 20 attempts, 121 yards and 2 touchdowns. Another 1,000-yard back for this offense, Ross. I mean, what do you think about King Frazier?
It's very impressive. I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's 13 years in a row now that NDSU's produced a 1,000-yard rusher. That's very impressive at any level of football. And just the way that they've been able to continuously put guys in positions to succeed that much is incredible. And what King did, I think, specifically is pretty impressive as well. This is a guy that had to share the backfield with not only two different running quarterbacks, but four other tailbacks. And he had to do it all season long. Sure, there were times when Bruce Anderson was not healthy or when Lance Dunn missed a little bit of time. Chase Morlock wasn't healthy. But he was always splitting carries. And so for him to continue that tradition of 1,000-yard rushers is extremely impressive. And I just want to talk even specifically about what happened since Carson Wentz went down. He's been so much more efficient on the ground. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but as far as 100-game performances, I know he had 100 yards or at least was the leading rusher against Montana. But these 100-plus-yard games are all late-season, grind-them-out games with Easton Stick at the quarterback position. So 120 yards again against a pretty good Richmond defense. He was definitely the best running back the Bison had against Northern Iowa. A kid that started out a little bit slow, had some issues with ball security, had a lot of fans, including myself, kind of clamoring for maybe some other running backs to get some touches. And here he is at the end of the season. You know, he was either, I think he was honorable mention all conference, but just an exceptional player and somebody that is really going to be key to the 2016 Bison for his senior year.
Another guy who I think you could put in that same category was junior defensive end Brandon Brosius. He was a ferocious man on the field against the Richmond Spiders. Again, two tackles for loss, two sacks. He was all over the field, Ross.
Very impressive game from Brad. No question about it. I remember talking to Greg Menard a little bit earlier in the season, doing an interview with Greg and saying how they kind of told him at the beginning of the season because of his when they would use him basically in pass rush situations, he'd be rushing from the other side of Colin Manuel, who is now a San Diego Charger, and the coaching staff challenged Greg and said, Greg, you know, you're not going to have Kyle collapsing the pocket from the other side. Nobody's going to be running into you this year. They're going to be running away from you. Well, that is kind of part of the narrative that maybe Brad Ambrosius at left end, at strong side end, there's more of a run defender, and he's really starting to develop. And I wouldn't call it a stigma because he is a very good run defender, but he's really starting to remove that run defender moniker. He is a legitimate pass rusher and a very good strong side pass rusher. And I think of the and obviously he's not to this level at all, but I think of the way that the mid-90s Packers used to do it with Reggie White playing left end instead of right end. Most teams will put their best pass rusher on the blind side, whereas they felt like if you had a guy who could stop the run at that strong side end, you're going to disrupt more pass plays with pressure in the face. And that's what Brad Ambrosius is providing right now, is pressure in the face. And that's only going to help in the national championship game and going forward, because Brad is another player that's returning, and he'll return along with Greg Menard next year. And they'll continue in their NDSU careers just causing pressure and pushing the quarterback into each other and getting tons and tons of sacks. So it's exciting to see him develop into not just a guy who's shutting down the strong side running game, but who is really bringing it to the quarterback.
Another exciting type of thing, you know, one of the most exciting plays that I love to watch on the football field is the wheel route, Ross. And thank God it returned against Richmond. You know, what can you say about Chase Morlock on the wheel?
Yeah, that was awesome to see, and we were up in the stands. I was not in the press box for that one. I was down in the stands with a buddy of mine, and they had run that inverted wishbone shotgun thing that they do. They just run it to Bruce Anderson, and I think it picked up a pretty decent amount of yardage. They ran Anderson off tackle, faked the dive from Stick, and ended up with the ball on the left hash. And then they substituted out Anderson for Frazier. And so you had King on the right and Morlock on the left. And I knew once Anderson was off the field that they weren't going to run it off tackle with King. That's not what NDSU is all about, especially with him on the field. So they faked the end around to, or not the end around, but the off tackle to King. And Morlock is pretending to lead block. Releases up the field and he's untouched. Hauls in an Easton Stick pass for the touchdown. Wouldn't be surprised. That one's kind of on the greatest hits album at this point, and I wouldn't be surprised if Polisek dials that baby up against Jacksonville State in the national championship game. But there's always something fun with Coach P, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But if you'll remember, in 2013, there was the jump pass for the touchdown with John Crockett. In 2014, they tried to run a tackle screen to Joe Haig. It's always real dangerous when you give Coach P 3 weeks to think of stuff.
And that's probably one of the reasons why NDSU has continued to dominate everyone that is not Missouri Valley. You know, again, we talked about it to lead in the show, patted you on the back. I think the stat you threw out last week in our preview show was that on average, NDSU at home wins, you know, by an average of 23 points a game. And that dominance continued again on Friday night. It's just, this trend is remarkable, and I hope it's something that fans are enjoying.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that I, you know, this is why we do this show, is for the people and to bring the knowledge to the people. And we brought them a hell of a nugget there. I hope maybe not only just as far as peace of mind was concerned going into that one, but also from a monetary perspective that somebody you know, may have benefited from that. I would say that, you know, that's a trend that I expect to continue. Opposing teams that have never played NDSU, that don't understand their style of football, and that have never played in the Fargo Dome, they can talk as much as they want and whatever, but they're just not going to win. And not only are they not going to win, but it's not going to be close. And that's the situation that they ended up in Friday night at the Dome. Was they were absolutely outclassed from the beginning. The crowd was into it. The crowd was extremely loud. The defense was extremely effective, and the offense was good enough. And you know, 33 points, you say, well, that's pretty darn good. But I mean it, good enough. I mean, these guys took care of business. There's no question about it.
You know, I sigh because I really don't want to start asking you about this, but we have to talk about it now. Is this Carson Wentz watch week one? Obviously, he didn't go on Friday night against Richmond, but as you've alluded to for the past few weeks, there's a likely scenario where you could see both Carson Wentz and Easton Stick down in Frisco. Is it time to start the watch for Mr. Carson Wentz?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you'll see a little bit of Wentz down in Frisco. I'm not sure if he'll start the game, but I think that the buys are going to have Carson Wentz packages and they're going to have Easton Stick packages. I think that this defense is playing so solidly that you can really expect both guys to go. Whereas if maybe you're a little bit more worried about the defense, you might play it a little more conservatively, stick with Stick, as it were, and not give Easton the chance to participate. But I just think you have to give Wentz a shot. I think that he's meant so much to this program. You know, there's a chance he's the first-round pick in NDSU history. Certainly going to go in the top two rounds, and is just a fantastic football player. And the idea that he's not going to help you win the game or give you a good chance to win is nuts. I don't care how many games in a row Easton Stick has won. Carson Wentz is a fantastic player. And I think, too, with that, you can run running plays for Wentz and passing plays for Stick. I think you could confuse the defense because if NDSU scouted well and you see Stick packages, you're probably thinking run, and if you see Wentz packages, you're probably thinking pass. But you can flip the script on that as well. So I'll know more information too when the press conference stuff starts down in Frisco. Unfortunately, just because of the way that the travel and everything works, I'm only going to be at the Friday set of interviews. I won't be there on Thursday, so you'll have to pay attention to some other buys and beat guys for that update. But I expect Wentz to practice that Friday walkthrough is an open practice that I'll be at, so I would expect to see a little bit of Wentz in Frisco. Keep in mind that there is no solid, there's nothing solid about that. It's just an expectation. I don't have any sources.
All right, so no hashtag sources for Ross, but just even the reason you're hesitant to, you know, talk about all this is just because Easton Stick has been playing so well, as you mentioned, and that continued against Richmond where he completed 65% of his passes for a couple of touchdowns. He's been, you know, a key part of this late season Bison run.
He really has. He was efficient. That's the way to describe his game. I think at some point, you know, he's going to be a playmaker. He's going to be the reason that you win games. And right now, he's the reason you're not losing. And that's fine. I mean, there is a difference to be noted there. But it's important. I mean, to have him being successful and not turning the ball over, although he did have a tipped pass intercepted in this one, it's a good thing. And it's good for his future and the future of the program, considering that he's going to be the face of it and the starter for the next 3 years. And there's really no question about that. Obviously, the only thing that would really make that not happen would be some sort of catastrophic injury to stick. But he was 65% completion percentage against Richmond, and he had a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. His season-long ratio is actually quite a bit better than 2-to-1, but that's the word that keeps coming up in my head, is efficient.
All right, so let's, you know, we're going to obviously have a couple weeks to talk about things, but let's get into Jacksonville State a little bit. Obviously, that's NDSU's opponent down in Frisco, and they hung a 62-point performance on Sam Houston to set up the meeting. I mean, this is a very potent offense, Ross.
It is. You know, they've played not great football. The Ohio Valley is one of the weaker conferences in all of FCS. They are riding quite a bit on playing in the weak side of the bracket. They put most of the good teams on NDSU's side of the bracket. There was you know, a lot of complaining going into
cough,
that.
Cough, Missouri Valley.
Right, yeah, exactly. A lot of complaining. And not only that, but like Richmond is a good team, and you know, Northern Iowa, Illinois State, the teams that made it were all pretty darn solid. The CAA is a decent league. Definitely, you know, the CAA, much better league than the Ohio Valley. There's no question about that. But they did put 62 points up on a Sam Houston team that, like I told you, they're the Bo Ryan Wisconsin of the FCS tournament. You don't think they're very good, and then at the end of it, they're deeper than they should be. Sam Houston State lost to NDSU last year in the semis. Now, that game was 35-3, but it seems like Sam Houston can take care of about everybody that isn't NDSU, and that did not happen at Jacksonville State. That was an absolute blowout from the beginning. Granted, that was kind of a weird game. Jacksonville State, which, by the way, is not in Florida. I just want everybody to know that before you get into a Twitter argument with somebody, that university's in Alabama. It's not in Florida. They pooch kicked the opening kickoff. The opposing team caught it, got drilled, fumbled, and it was their ball inside the 30. And it was just a boat race from there. I'm saying, you know, chances are Sam Houston State only beats them 2 out of 10 times, 3 out of 10 times. But that was a weird game for sure. I guess I say all that to say this: they're better than maybe I thought they'd be. At the beginning of this whole thing, when I said if NDSU makes it through the bracket, they should be favored by 30 in Frisco, I might be backpedaling on that just a little bit.
Well, most importantly from this whole ordeal, Ross, is that for the fifth straight year, national championship game. Again, I hope, can you try to put that in perspective for fans? You know, it is not every day that you see 5 straight national championship trips.
Well, just look at, you know, look at the other programs. Look at honestly, go back and look at go look at the brackets for the last 6 years where NDSU made it to the quarters, the finals, the finals, the finals, the finals, and the finals. Like, go look and try and find common teams. The best program that you'll find is Sam Houston, and they have no titles. And they've lost the last 2 semifinal games 97-13 or something like that. I mean, just absolutely getting trashed. And that arguably is the second best program in the country over the last 6 years. And there isn't even anybody close. This isn't the Alabama of the FCS. They're way past what Alabama does in the FBS. And I'm not saying that it's more impressive than what Alabama does, because Alabama's at the highest level. But what I'm saying is the dominance is so rare. And people need to really appreciate what's going on in Fargo. I think Coach Klieman put it best after the Northern Iowa game. He said, "I know it's an expectation for us to be here, but it's doggone hard." And it is doggone hard. And I just want Bison fans to understand and appreciate what they have and what's been going on for the last 5 years, because there are a lot of programs in the football championship subdivision, and none of them have ever done or are doing this.
All right. I think that was beautifully put, Ross. You know, and you know, we'll talk enough about Frisco and the championship game here in the next couple of weeks, but let's move on to some other NDSU football news. And Ross, you want to talk about some players that have decided to move on from the Bison program?
Well, one of them decided and the other one didn't. there are two, and I think fullback Tyler Glass is also no longer part of the program, but the two ones of note are the one of the kids was Andrew Smith, the free safety from the Sioux Falls area. That's a guy who has had some meaningful snaps for this Bison team, played a little bit when Trey Dempsey got his concussion. Things like that. He was a valued special teamer. He was dismissed from the team. I know no information outside of violation of team rules, and that's honestly most of what you'll get from a college football program when they dismiss a kid. That they'll kick him off the team, but they won't air his dirty laundry, and that's to be expected. So Andrew Smith no longer part of the program. And then one of the most highly regarded recruits of last year's class, Trenton Mooney. He's an offensive lineman from the, I think, the Missouri area, certainly right there in the middle of the United States. He had some personal stuff happen where he'll no longer be part of the program, and that's too bad. It seemed like a nice kid. NDSU beat Oregon. Oregon had a preferred walk-on position ready for Trent. Also, you know, every FCS team basically in this area offered him a full-ride scholarship. He was one of the crown jewels of last year's recruiting class. He has transferred to be closer to home. He transferred to Division II powerhouse Pittsburgh State. That's in Kansas. And so he will be a gorilla for the rest of his college football career. Also, John Crockett's little brother, Shadid, was at wide receiver, got some action. I think he even caught a touchdown in the spring game. He is also no longer with the program, and I honestly don't know why. I did not get any information on that. He's just no longer listed on the roster and as with those other three names that were removed. And now, Ryan, we need some contributions from you. This was a big the day after and these last few days following. The win over Richmond was absolutely huge from a recruiting perspective for the Bison.
To be quite honest, I followed recruiting for more than a few years now, and what you know, Coach Riley did on Saturday was absolutely remarkable. And I say that because I'm almost certain the man had six in-home visits with six different recruits in about an eight-hour span. I can't tell you how hard that is to do, and to know that many names of parents, to know you know exactly what you're supposed to say to six different people, and to get there on time and make sure each in-home visit goes as well as planned. And you know, if someone sees Riley out at a bar sometime or wherever in the next few months here, buy the man a beer, because that was some kind of dedication there. But yeah, the day after that win, every single Bison coach was on the road recruiting for the first time in at least a month or two, as you know, the staff had been dealing with trying to prepare themselves to get back to the fifth straight national championship game. And everyone from Coach Kleiman down to Coach Riley and to each one of the position coaches was out either seeing one of the you know the current NDSU commits, or they were out trying to get the next Bison commit. So, you know, a few guys that I think I should probably highlight is, you know, where Coach Kleiman was on Saturday. And Coach Kleiman was down here in the Twin Cities, and he was meeting with wide receiver commit Sean Engel, and I believe safety commit slash outside linebacker commit Moses Nyangacha. Both guys are very firm to the Bison, and they will be taking their official visits in January. A few names to note of guys that could be potential Bison here in the next upcoming weeks. I will start on the offensive line, and you know, with Trenton Mooney moving on, the guy that looks to be next up on the pecking order is offensive lineman Coyote Owasika from Maple Grove High School down here in the Twin Cities. He's a guy who has, you know, a couple of BCS offers at one time. Iowa State was a legitimate offer, you know, and then until the coach moved out. But he's got Hawaii, UNI, Wyoming, where he's already taken an official visit, SDSU, where he's got an official visit set for the weekend of January 9th. But he's someone that visited this past summer. He earned an offer, and he was someone that was told that, you know, NDSU doesn't have any spots for him. And with Trent moving on, it appears that they obviously do now, and they're trying to get him on an official visit for the weekend of January 16th. But Hawaii is also trying to get him that weekend. So Coyote hasn't made a decision yet, but he's someone that's extremely interested in NDSU. Another guy that is very interesting to see that he hasn't blown up any further is Kansas's Gatorade Player of the Year in Christian Jagan. He is from Mill Valley High School, which is the same high school as current offensive line commit Ben Hecht. So Christian has other offers from UNI, SDSU, and he's got a very full January, which is full with official visits to places like SDSU, UNI, and he's also got one set up to Iowa for the last weekend there. So he really does want a BCS offer. I talked with him yesterday. But as of right now, NDSU and UNI are his top two schools. Both have offered him full-ride scholarships. I believe he is set to visit UNI on the 9th of January and NDSU on the 16th. So they're going to be battling out for their Christian is 6'2", 200 pounds. He could play either wide receiver or safety at NDSU. He prefers the offensive side of the ball, but he really doesn't care. All he knows about NDSU at this point in time is that Ben is committed there, plus that all NDSUs win national championships, which isn't a bad thing to know about a school. And, you know, I think another thing we should probably talk about is the fact that Co-Keith is indeed flipped to Minnesota. So what does that mean? That means defensive end out of Missouri. William Bradley King received an offer shortly after Coach Riley visited his home. Coach Kleiman talked to him and said, you have a full ride offer from NDSU, and we can't wait to get you up on campus here on January 16th. He's another guy who, you know, NDSU will be competing against a bunch of different Missouri Valley schools. Again, same customers, UNI, South Dakota State, Missouri State. You know, William has the Bison in his top two with SDSU. He is a former Western Illinois commit. And then when Nielsen moved to South Dakota, you know, he decided to move on. So he's another guy that you should probably keep in contact with or keep in the back of your mind. As far as, you know, a safety, one guy that I've heard that is very high on the staff, or the staff is very high on, is a defensive back by the name of True Wilson, T-R-U, from De La Salle High School out in Michigan. He's got a bunch of military offers, plus Robert Morris at Lehigh. He does not yet have an NDSU offer at this time, but he will be taking an official visit to NDSU on the 16th as well, and I expect the Bison to offer. And if they do, I think they got a pretty good shot at him. He's also, I believe, a Semper Fi All-American, so he had a heck of a senior year. But, you know, to kind of summarize things, Ross, I expect the 9th, the 16th, the 23rd, and the 30th, the last four official visit weekends before signing day, to be pretty crazy. Specifically the 16th, where I've heard there could be as many as 13 official visitors on campus. And to put things in perspective there, I can't even believe NDSU has had more than, I believe, five or six total so far. So that 16th weekend is going to be pretty crazy. But, you know, why don't we move on, you know, from recruiting here. Let's talk some men's hoops, Ross. So obviously fans know that the Bison team is out in Utah, and they're competing in the Christmas tournament out there. In their first game, I believe they beat Idaho State. What can you tell us, Ross?
Yep. NDSU won a tight game against Idaho State of the Big Sky Conference. They are out in Utah. Logan, I believe, is where they're at. Utah State is the host of this tournament. They won a close game against Iowa State and yet again lost Corey Brown to an injury. We do know that it was a knee. And, of course, you always get a little bit scared when it's a knee. Sometimes, you know, with those CL initials, whether it's AM or P, those are, you know, never great when that kind of stuff happens. What I don't know, though, and I have talked to a few sources of mine around the program. They don't have a diagnosis yet. They weren't able to get one immediately following the game in Utah, and then they played another game, and he did not go in that following game against UT Rio Grande Valley. Kai Cabellas, not Malik Clements, got the start against the Vaqueros. They got absolutely trashed, did UT Rio Grande Valley, but not right away. Again, the Bison continue to start games slowly. They had first half deficits in both those contests.
And does that give you any reason for concern? I mean, it seems like we're talking about the same thing after each game, where it's a slow start and NDSU has to come back. I mean, is there anything that you think this team should be changing besides getting off to a faster start?
No, I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with maturity. They are a young team, and eventually they're going to be better, I guess, is the expert way of putting that, is that I think they're going to do better. I just think that, you know, that is a younger group, and they struggle to string together 40 minutes of solid play, like a lot of younger groups do. And so my level of concern is just not that high. I think that eventually they will get it figured out. And by eventually, I mean pretty darn quick here. I think that this is going to be a problem that you see become more and more minor as this season goes along. Now, that all could change if Corey Brown is lost for the season. There's certainly no question about that. He is such a key contributor to that program, and such a big part of what they do, because, to be honest, without Corey Brown, they kind of have some duplicity in some roles. A lot of guys that do the same thing with not a lot of guys that do what Corey does.
All right, I hear you. You know, let's talk a little bit more about that UT, you know, Rio Grande Valley game. Last night, NDSU ends up winning by 18. Again, only 4 points was the margin that the Bison were leading at halftime. They ended up, you know, expounding on it a little bit more in the second half. But Peace Move, our guy, again, leads the team in scoring, 16 points, 9 rebounds. He seems to be establishing himself among the leading rebounders on this team.
Well, Paul is all of 6'5", and a lot of the times for NDSU, that makes him one of the two or three tallest guys on the court. But what I've noticed is that if his guy is lollygagging up on the top of the perimeter and spotting up, which, you know, he does guard opposing twos quite a bit, so you will see that quite often, he's going to go ahead and crash the defensive boards. And obviously that's the same as crashing the offensive boards. He's just going towards the rim unencumbered and skying for rebounds, and that's happening, you know, quite a bit. And so he's a kid that with his length and his athletic ability and the fact that his guy's never boxing him out on the – well, you wouldn't do that on the offensive end, but he's just running to the rim free and skying and grabbing these rebounds. And the great thing about Paul is his background as a point guard. So as soon as he skies for that rebound, he's starting the primary break. He's going up the floor. So very impressive player, leading the team in scoring. Second on the team in rebounding from the two-guard position. Just a special, special kid.
So with the two consecutive victories, that sets up a big matchup with Utah State tonight, the host team. You know, what are you expecting to see? Are you thinking NDSU is able to pull out the sweep, or do you think this is going to be a pretty tough game?
I think this one might be a little bit tough. I don't anticipate Corey Brown playing just out of a gut reaction. I think if the injury was no big deal, he probably would have played last night, and I think it's probably something that they're going to have to get checked out a little bit when he comes home to Fargo. Without him, you do have that duplicity, and what I mean by that is you're going to have Carlin Dupree and Kai Cabellas and Paul Miller all on the floor at the same time. None of those guys are really, like, you know, a top defender, and then they'll be playing with Jacobson and Dylan Miller. They're definitely, at that point, playing four around one. I mean, those guys just, none of them really have the ability to post up, where sometimes Corey Brown actually did. Depending on who was guarding him, he could go strong to the rim, maybe even play a little bit with his back to the basket. But he's the number one perimeter defender on the team. So if, you know, Utah State had a primary scorer, it definitely would have been Corey Brown on him. And just the level of competition. I mean, this is a Mountain West team. This is a conference that you would consider to be upper mid-major in the Mountain West, certainly. And so with them being definitely the best team that isn't NDSU in this tournament, and with the Bison possibly being without Corey Brown, I would think that this one is maybe going to be a tough one, and a big important one too, because the Summit League is actually up to eighth in conference RPI, and that's when you start fiddling with possibly being a two-bid league when you're the eighth best conference out of the 32 conferences, where you could get into a situation where maybe South Dakota State loses the Summit League championship to NDSU and still gets into the field. If the conference is still that highly thought of, South Dakota State has some high major non-conference wins. You know, if they go 15-1 in league play and happen to lose at the tournament, you could see a scenario where they are considered foreign at large. So that's a big deal for the conference, certainly. And a win over a Mountain West team, even in a meaningless holiday tournament, is only going to help that. So it's an important one tonight for NDSU, especially considering that they have a full week off until they have to play again, and even then it's against a non-Division I, non-counter game.
So, you know, after tonight's game, the Bison will return home a week from tonight against Northern College on Wednesday the 30th of December, before opening Summit League play against Denver at home. So three straight home games coming, Ross. You know, is that a good – I'm guessing that should be probably a pretty good thing for this team.
Well, historically it certainly is. This is an NDSU program that's now won 29 straight at home, and that's a hell of a number. And so I would anticipate, you know, the Bison fans being up for those three. Like I said, the one is a Division I non-counter, but after that it's conference play, and that's a big deal. So it'll be interesting to see how the Bison fans react to being back at home. Speaking of home, the athletic department released a pretty awesome set of pictures and video on the progress that they're making on the Shack, the new basketball arena. So either check out our Twitter feed or check out the NDSU men's basketball Twitter feed for the new arena updates.
Well, I think that should probably just wrap things up, Ross. Do you have anything else to add to our listeners here just a couple of days before the holidays?
Just to thank them for listening and wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Absolutely. So for myself, for Ross, we thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys have a happy holidays, and we'll talk with you guys next week. So go Bison.